You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickard will be back with me on Monday. It's Food Friday here on Central Time. We're celebrating the beginning of the outdoor farmers market season in Wisconsin. The ginormous Dane County Market by the Capitol is set to start tomorrow, I believe. Other ones are kicking off over the next few weeks around the state. So we decided to ask Food Friday regular Lori Skelton to help us bridge the gap between winter and spring produce. She's with us to talk about how to bring together those leftover winter starches and the greens of spring. And we're taking your calls, too. What are you looking forward to cooking with in the spring? What spring dishes are you known for? What do you usually make with the first spoils of spring? And if you're going to be selling at a farmer's market in the next couple of weeks, what's coming up? What should we be planning on using? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Lori Skelton is a Food Friday regular, one of WPR's in-house foodies. Lori, welcome back.
Good to be here.
All right. So what sparked this idea to explore what you're calling a spring transitional cooking?
This happens a lot whether you've got a CSA or you're just cleaning out the refrigerator, and you come across those last root vegetables that you've been hanging on to all winter, just haven't gotten around to eating. You know you need to finish the food. You don't want to waste it. But right now, what's available in terms of spring vegetables, we're just now coming on board. There's not a lot to choose from, and what's out there is going to be a little bit pricey. So the idea was find a way to combine the last of your winter starches with the first of your spring greens. And in some cases, even look beyond the farmer's market, looking to your actual own backyard. Mm-hmm. Eating some weeds can be quite fun in the spring.
I'm going to be honest with you, Lori. I sometimes avoid those early farmers markets and think, the good stuff's coming later. But you say we should be getting out there, getting some of these early spring things. There's enough to make it worth our while.
One of the things that we tend to forget with the attitude of, the good stuff's coming later, is what if somebody shows up with just a little bit of something that they're not sure they want to continue cultivating, or is it worth the trouble for me to go foraging for a particular greenery or something that they find just in the forest? If you don't show up and support that farmer or that forager, it's not going to be around. So this is a wonderful way to take a chance on things. If it's just a little bit of green, you can try it as a side dish or incorporate it into a recipe you already have. You're not really losing out on anything, and you just might gain something.
Well, give us a quick rogue's gallery before we start diving into the recipes you tried. What are some of the stars of the early spring green community?
Obviously, spinach is a great thing to start with. There are several farmers I know in the Madison market that do what they call frost-sweetened spinach, that the very first spinach of the year will always be fun to work with. But then there are things like ramps. Now, we always think of the bulb to chop up with our eggs or put in with our mushrooms, but ramp leaves are actually delightful to work with. Blanch them quickly in boiling water and chop them up, and they can be used just like a green. Obviously, they're going to have that pungent, wonderful, rampy flavor, but they can go in places where spinach might go. One of the things that I tried was finding different ways to make gnocchi, which are those little bite-sized Italian dumplings. They're usually made with potato. I found a lot of recipes online that would incorporate maybe two-thirds potato and one-third other root vegetable, like carrots or beets, but also things like spinach. And if you were to put ramp greens in with your potatoes for gnocchi, you almost wouldn't need sauce, maybe just a little bit of butter, and you're good to go.
Well, that's a great start for our fall starches, our winter starches, and some of those greens. Here's one. Now, all right, dandelions. Anybody with a lawn and a certain attitude doesn't like to see them.
Right. But the thing is, if you are trying to bring bees back into your area, you don't want to be using the Roundup on the dandelions. You really want to keep the dandelions out there because that's, in some cases, the first flowers that the bees are going to be able to get. So if you haven't used a weed killer on your lawn in a while, you can find the tenderest, dandelion leaves, and they're wonderful to use. Throw a couple of handfuls into your salad, or you can do what I did. Again, treat them like spinach. Chop the stems, saute the stems, chop the leaves a little bit coarser, and saute those. Wilt them gently, and you can move them into a gratin.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. I will say my problem with dandelion greens is I do that. I rinse them off and put them in salad. They get limp. They're kind of bitter. But in this gratin, we're calling it a sweet potato and dandelion greens au gratin, I would say, if
yes.
I looked at it. I thought it tasted great. I didn't get the bitterness that I associate with when I've tried to eat dandelion greens.
And that's because, one, I wasn't working with very old greens. I mean, they were certainly hefty, but they weren't so far past their pickable date that the bitterness really came through.
So that's key, get the dandelions early.
That's certainly the main thing. You don't want to wait too long in the season to pull your dandelion greens. But the other thing I did was I paired them with sweet potatoes. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you've got, even if it is a bitter green, the fact you're working with a starch that is so sweet was just amazing. There was your basic white sauce, which I added garlic and nutmeg to, and then it was layered with Gruyere cheese as well. So you've got a little bit of bitter, you've got a little bit of heft in that cheese, and then those wonderful sweet, sweet potatoes.
Talking to Lori Skelton about transitional cooking, taking the starches, the potatoes, the carrots, the things we've been eating all winter while waiting for the new produce and getting those first spring bits of produce, merging them together, make some interesting recipes. Give us the basics on that au gratin. What are the steps toward making that?
Well, fortunately, this is the one that we have the recipe on the Central Time website and the Facebook page. Mm-hmm. And you have raw sweet potatoes. You slice them thinly, but you don't have to worry about pre-cooking those ahead of time. Once you've wilted down your greens, and I will admit I wilted them down with a little bit of wine rather than straight water, but once you've got the greens wilted down, it's just a matter of a layer of the sweet potatoes in a buttered 9x13 baking dish, a little bit of the white sauce, a little bit of the greens, cheese on top, one more layer, extra cheese on top, a little bit more salt and pepper, throw it in the oven for 45 minutes until the top is bubbly golden brown. And this was gone in less than an hour.
This
Everybody loved it.
I loved it. This was a really good one. And again, it's on the Central Time Facebook page. That's the sweet potato and dandelion greens au gratin.
Although I really think it needs a shorter name. Somebody suggested We'd Be Gone, but I don't think we can say that.
Yeah, it doesn't sound appetizing.
So if anybody can come up with a shorter name for sweet potato and dandelion greens au gratin, let us know.
All right, well, we had a soup this time. You had some, what was it, turnips and parsnips. What was the spring element in this one?
Watercress.
Watercress, that was it.
Now, here I was working from a cookbook called Secrets of Longevity from Dr. Mao Sheng. And his idea was, again, take your old, tired winter greens and winter starches and throw them with a vibrant spring green. I will say this. I like the concept, but what we came up with, I still think needed a bit more flavor. This was simply simmer everything together for 40 minutes and then serve immediately. No salt, no pepper, no fat. None of the vegetables were sautéed in butter or oil before we started cooking them. And the general comment was, it's a nice idea, but by simmering the watercress that long, we've lost the zing of that green. My suggestion would be, if you're going to be putting together a soup with a watercress, gently caramelize your vegetables, then simmer them in your vegetable stock, then add the watercress for just the last 5 minutes so it gets cooked, but it doesn't get cooked to bits, and then throw it in the blender. I really think this would have worked better as a puree rather than a broth. Maybe some people are thinking, well, it's got to be purist. I want just the broth and the vegetables, nothing else between me and the essence of the meal. I wouldn't have minded it being just a little creamier. Maybe adding a little bit of parsley oil at the end would have helped as well.
So if we encounter some watercress, maybe at a farmer's market in the next couple of weeks, it sounds like our lesson here is don't overcook it. Just give a little something. Otherwise, you're going to lose the distinctive flavor.
Obviously, watercress is lovely fresh. But if you, again, want to extend it and put it into a dish, wait until the last 5 minutes.
We're talking to Food Friday regular Lori Skelton about how to combine the last of winter's produce with the first of the spring greens as farmers market season kicks off one market at a time around the state. And we want to hear from you. What is your favorite spring produce? Are you holding out for a local asparagus maybe? What are the things you look forward to as the farmers markets start to open up? If you're on the other side of things, if you're selling at a farmer's market or you have a farm, a big garden, a CSA, what's coming up? What are you looking forward to cooking with? Some recipe advice, or maybe you have a question. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Check out Lori's recipe while you're there. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. It's Food Friday. We have Lori Skelton with us. She has advice on taking the last of the winter stuff, the potatoes, the turnips, the parsnips, the carrots, and combining it with the first of the new year's produce, dandelion greens, watercress, early spinach, you name it. And you can join the conversation. Are you cooking along these lines? Are you looking forward to farmers markets? What are you looking forward to getting? Do you have some ideas for great spring cooking? Do you forage in your own backyard for maybe dandelion greens or other usable foods? And if you are a farmer yourself, what is coming up? What's looking good? What are people going to go nuts for when you hit the farmer's market this year? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post over at the Central Time Facebook page. Well, Lori, you told us how to make peace with one enemy, dandelions, and use those greens and that sweet potato and dandelion greens au gratin. Garlic mustard.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a recipe for that. We had it this week.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I didn't know. I mean, it's got garlic and mustard both in the name. I didn't know we could actually eat the stuff.
This is a noxious weed. This is an invasive thing that just takes over. And everyone I know who has a garden or who even has a woods they're trying to maintain and keep from getting overrun with invasive will be out getting rid of the garlic mustard. And you have to dig it up. You have to get rid. This stuff is just so noxious. And the thing is, it keeps coming back every year, no matter how careful you are. So years ago, somebody told me, you know, you can make pesto out of garlic mustard. I thought they were crazy at the time. I have since discovered garlic mustard pesto is amazing. Basically, you're talking a packed cup of roughly chopped garlic mustard leaves, maybe half a cup of Parmesan cheese, and depending on how you're going to use it, 1 to 2 tablespoons of olive oil. That's your basic recipe. If you're going to add it to pasta, one thing garlic mustard really does well with garlic mustard pesto in a pasta salad, It's great cold. It's nice over hot pasta, but there's something about having that mustard and garlic flavor on cold pasta salads that are just it's just out of this world. What I did this week was I made a ricotta tart base, just puff pastry with some ricotta cheese and cream on top of that. It's in this month's Bon Appetit magazine as the basis for a roasted root vegetable tart. I gently browned some cipollini onions, the sweeter onions, scattered them across the tart, baked the tart, and then to garnish it, I just loaded that thing with garlic mustard pesto. It's amazing. And you're basically eating your enemy. You are gaining your enemy's strength by really taking over.
It was delicious. Maybe we'll get into the dough, the phyllo dough in a bit. Let's go to a caller, though, at 800-642-1234. We've got Becky on the line with us in Milwaukee. Becky, hi there.
Hi. I'm calling. One of my favorite things to make in spring from the farmer's market is a garlic scape pesto. Olive oil, Parmesan, and almonds.
Using almonds for the pesto. And what do you end up serving? Just put it on pasta, Becky, or do you use in other recipes then?
I will usually put it over like lean chicken breasts or tilapia and bake it until it's kind of almost like a crusted topping.
That
sounds fantastic. Becky, thank you so much for that. Garlic scapes, what's particular? What's unique about those, Lori?
Well, if you if you planted garlic last fall, and garlic is weird, you have to plant it in the fall, it has to sit over winter, and it's one of the first things to come up in the spring. And while you may have set out your neat rows of garlic over the fall, things do shift over the winter. You do have to thin out your garlic bed in the spring. So this is just the very young garlic. Usually it's what you've thinned out, or if you planted enough, you just go ahead and rip out part of the patch. It's just very young garlic. It certainly tastes like garlic, but it does have that fresher, greener flavor. And you can use the whole thing. It's not just the bulb. It's the whole, the stem, the leaf. And like ramp leaves, you can blanch them or put them in a pesto like you just heard. Almonds are a great idea. Pine nuts may be a little what we're used to with a basil pesto, but pine nuts can sometimes overwhelm those delicate greens. Almonds are a great choice.
Thank you so much for saying that you can use the whole part of the
garlic
seed, because I've sat there holding them like, do I do this or this? And I usually do the bulb part. Like, you can use the whole thing.
Just throw it with some olive oil and Parmesan in the blender, then take it out, add your nuts to it. Yeah, easy. You know, just make certain you've got the dirt off.
Becky, thanks so much for that call at 800-642-1234. Food Friday, talking to Lori Skelton, making the most of our early spring greens and other stuff, and mixing it with what we have left of sweet potatoes, other starches, and things like that. You had some. I had a spinach idea. I think you wanted to talk about, Lori.
Spinach is a lovely thing in the spring all on its own. But if you want to combine spinach with your older root vegetables, a really nice way to do it is to gently steam the vegetables, leave them in fairly nice-sized chunks, and then use that with your spinach for a wilted spinach salad. Most people think wilted spinach salad with hard-cooked eggs and red onion and hot bacon dressing. So I was out to find out some variant of a hot dressing that would be vegetarian or vegan that you could use in combination with other vegetables. And what seems to come up a lot on the internet and I think would make a really good combination would be 2 tablespoons of light-tasting canola oil combined with 2 teaspoons of sesame oil. Gently heat that in a saucepan, then add a little Dijon mustard, some rice vinegar, maybe some honey, or maybe some miso. You're going to get, with the miso, some of the flavor of soy sauce, but more of a rounded flavor, more of a mouth-filling flavor that would pair so beautifully with veggies.
So I can see the sesame oil and maybe that miso. That covers what you're missing if you think of the bacon. That covers that range of flavors, huh?
Yeah, you're getting umami again.
Umami.
I'm starting to think there should be a Lori's Food Friday drinking game. Take a big drink of whatever every time I say umami.
Other things you're looking forward to, Lori, that things that aren't maybe up yet, maybe won't be at the farmers markets that start this weekend, but what is next on the list?
Next on the list will be very specific, the very wonderful morel mushrooms, which will be coming up at some point, maybe even in your back garden. You never know. And that will be added to what's already coming up in my garden. The thing that I talked about a year ago, sorrel, those lemony tart, one of the first greens to come up. There is a wonderful recipe in Deborah Madison's Greens Cookbook from the Greens Restaurant in San Francisco where you make a mushroom timbal, where a lot of mushrooms are blended up with a little bit of custard and baked in a ramekin and then unmolded, and you put this sorrel sauce with a little bit of creme fraiche and a lot of lovely lemony leaves on top of those morel mushrooms, and that's just out of this world. But then again, with morels, all you really need to do is just fry them in butter.
I was going to say, I've made morel mushrooms myself a couple of times. The ingredient list was butter, morels, and pepper.
That's all they needed. So that is the thing I'm waiting for.
Well, I want to get into a couple of brief technique tips. Wilting spinach. I use spinach. It's either raw or I'm like, you know, really cooking it down.
Okay.
How do we wilt it?
When you are wilting your spinach, do you separate leaves from stems? Do you cook the stems?
Sometimes. I'm not wilting it. I'm like, you know, I'm cooking it.
Okay.
On a cast iron skillet. Boom. Wilting sounds like it's just a quick little thing.
I guess it depends on how wilted you like mm-hmm. your spinach. For me, a lot
like
of...
seared. I'm thinking I sear the spinach.
I'm not a fan of that much caramelization on spinach, mm-hmm. at least not at this time of the year. I could see doing that later in the season. Say, if you've got spinach in your garden and it's gotten a little bit old, even if it's bolted, caramelizing it that way, searing it that way would be a way to bring back some flavor.
Okay. So the tougher stuff I want to do that way.
I think so. That's my palate. Certainly, spinach, you can play a lot with it. A lot depends also whether or not you are doing your spinach on the stovetop and then immediately serving it, or are you wilting it slightly on the stovetop so that you can then put it in the oven and, say, bake it under baked eggs or something like that.
Yeah, searing I'd be serving right away. Wilting is that thing if it's a step along the way.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Well, Lori, thank you as always for joining us.
My pleasure.
That's Lori Skelton, Food Friday regular, one of WPR's in-house foodies. She was with us to talk about how to bring together our winter produce, the leftover stuff, our spring produce in our kitchens.